Well, Chris Bowen, thank you for making the time. Welcome back to the podcast.
Always a pleasure, Tom. Good to be with you.
We really appreciate it at such a busy time. Let me ask you how things are going with fuel. Last night, the Prime Minister told Australians that they should go about their normal lives, use the fuel they need, but not more. Are the shortages getting worse? How are you feeling about things?
Well, the first thing to say, Tom, is that it's still the case that no disruption has occurred at this point to supply to Australia. I know that people at service stations go, well, how can Bowen be telling the truth if, you know, there's no fuel at the service station and you keep saying all the shipments arrive? But two things can be true and are true. That's not to say there aren't risks and supply chain disruptions in the system, but as we speak today, every expected delivery has arrived, and indeed we have contracted deliveries now well through April and into May. Now, as I said from the beginning, from the 28th of February, there are real shocks to the supply chain, but they do take some time to work their way through to Australia. So the good news is, as we speak, our supply is strong. We have, as you and I are speaking, 39 days of petrol and 30 days of diesel and 30 days of jet fuel in our stocks. I update those figures every Saturday, so, and I'll update them again on Saturday. On service stations, we are making progress. We have seen a massive spike in demand, which has, really led to some, quite big shortages in regional Australia in particular. But, there's been massive deliveries to regional Australia. In New South Wales, we've been focusing on the farmers because they're seeding at the moment, seeding and sowing. So to be very frank with you, we've concentrated, when I say we, the system generally, us and the petrol companies, concentrated on getting diesel in particular to the farmers so that they can keep their tractors running. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'd have a problem, later in the year. That has meant the service station outages in New South Wales have been higher than anyone would like, but I think, most sensible people would say, yep, concentrate on the farmers first. But in most other states, or in every other state, the service station outages have been around 2-3%. I'm not saying that's not very inconvenient for the people at that service station, but also keeping it in context.
Okay, let me come back to the regions in a moment because that's a particular area of importance. But in the cities, do you feel like into the next couple of weeks things are going to even out a little bit more?
Well, I hope so. We are seeing some plateauing of that demand and, small reductions in demand. Everyone's using the same amount of petrol and diesel, right? Use hasn't gone up, but demand has. Obviously, it's a tricky period with Easter and lots of people going on holidays and, that's okay. But that will put more pressure on service stations. So we'll be working closely right through Easter on that. People should take as much petrol and diesel as they need, please. Don't take more or don't take less than you need. And obviously, as the PM and we said, good time to be sensible, about use. We're not asking anyone not to go on holidays. We're not asking anyone not to go to the beach. We are just asking people to be sensible at this time.
In the regions, the crisis has been particularly acute. As you say, it's the demand issue that's really put pressure on the system. Has there been market failure? This seems to be one of the most important areas of your work.
Yeah, and as is often the case, there's more than one thing going on here. We've seen massive increases in demand. That's point one. Two, a lot of people might not sort of understand the belief, but right across how the fuel market works. The fuel market in the city works on contracts, by and large. So service stations, tend to contract their use well ahead of time, as do the big users like mining companies and et cetera, whereas in the bush service stations, they work on the spot market, by and large.
Just explain what that means.
So the spot market basically means you don't have a contract, right? You haven't got a contracted fuel delivery, months in advance. You just buy fuel when and if you need it. And that's fine 99% of the time, but understandably, the fuel companies say, well, we've got all these contracts we have to supply. And often a contract says, well, we contract to buy X, 1,000 litres, but we can also buy up to Y 1,000 litres if we need it. So obviously all those contracts are buying their absolute maximum allowed, which means the spot market hasn't been working. If you want to call that a market failure, you can. The spot market hasn't been working like it normally does, and that's had its biggest impact by far on the bush because the city service stations are on contract. So they're just and the fuel companies have no legal choice. They must fulfil their contracts, right? So that's what's been going on. It's a combination of the demand and then what we call in the fuel industry, bulk allocations, which means that all the contracts get fulfilled, but the spot market tends to stop working.
And my understanding is that's often independent operators, yep. and particularly in the bush, because yes. the market is different out there. The big operators don't always have a service station
that's
in
right,
every
Tom.
Town.
That's right. Mm.
Is that a lesson that we might take out of this, that some other system might be better in the future?
Well, obviously, when we're through this, we'll obviously look back as a government and say, well, okay, you should never take a difficult situation and not try and, you know, improve things and learn from it, and what do we get right as a country and what do we get wrong. I don't think that the government will sort of intervene and say, well, we're going to make everyone use contracts. But I do think there'll be some players who say, well, the spot market worked for us for a long time, mm-hmm. but now if this, you know, we're in an uncertain environment, you know, going forward. There's been three energy shocks in my lifetime, and two of them have been in the last 4 years.
Yeah,
you know, it's getting more common. You know, I've lived through three international energy crises, and I've been energy minister for two of them. I would argue there's no causality there. it's just my lot in life. But, you know, the world is not going to get a more certain and stable place. So, you know, there might be some people who think about, well, we might switch to the contract market, but that's primarily a matter for them.
Yep. How have the companies been in dealing with the government? Are you getting any resistance from the need to bring as much as possible to Australia, fill the gaps that are emerging and spread fuel around as needed?
No. You know, I'm on the phone at least once a day to every, you know, every company in Australia, basically every fuel company in Australia, not every, but the big players and the medium sized players, and sometimes more than once a day. We've been keeping close contact. So, for example, you may or may not want to talk about any detail, but the legislation we just passed in lightning speed time to give Export Finance Australia the ability to go out and help get fuel to Australia. I mean, I had fuel companies raising me last Wednesday for the first time to say, look, there's cargoes available in the world, but they're increasingly expensive. You know, they're $25 million a ship more than they were 3 weeks ago.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And the oil price is very volatile. So our concern, they told me, more than one, our concern is if we're buying oil or petrol from the United States, it takes a month to get here. So if peace breaks out in that month while the ship's on its way here and we've spent $25 or $50 million more on that ship, we are exposing our shareholders. We want to do the right thing by the country. We want to bring that fuel to Australia, but we've also got to think about our duty to our shareholders. Mm-hmm. And if you times those ships by 10, 12, 15, you're talking multiple, multiples of exposure for the company. So we thought, well, that's fair enough. And then very quickly, we came up with the idea of Export Finance Australia sharing the risk so that we can go and get those cargoes for Australia. So by that was first raised to me Tuesday, Wednesday last week, and by last night, the Governor-General signed it into law. So that's companies and the government keeping in very close contact, working together.
Mm. Yeah, legislation from idea to law in less than a week is pretty rare.
Yeah, it is. But it's necessary in the circumstance because we're not sitting for 5 weeks, right? Yep. If the Parliament was sitting, you know, over the next 5 weeks, you might have a different view. But we said, well, we've got to get this done, so let's get cracking.
Yep. Okay, well, cutting to the chase a little bit, I think some of our listeners will be wondering, is rationing or some kind of mandating going to be necessary in the future? What is your view there?
Well, we're certainly not there, but what we have done is agree with the states a four-stage approach. Now, we're currently at stage two, and we hope to stay at stage two. But we also have to plan. You know, at the moment, as I said, there's been no disruption to supply to Australia. If and when there is, then obviously we assess the situation and assess how serious it is. The next stage would be more public information campaigns, really explaining to people more what we can do. You actually can reduce your fuel use quite a lot by pumping up your tyres a bit more, for example. Well, obviously, we're working on all those things, but it would be, voluntary, public information campaigns, certainly under stage three. We hope and are working on the basis that would be enough. But obviously, governments also plan. I think people understand, a good government should plan, as the states are doing, as we are doing together. It's best to be coordinated. That's our role. The states have lots of powers, but, we learnt from COVID. It's best it's best that states and Commonwealth work together to get as much coordination as possible. I think, frankly, you know, I don't want to be too political, but, you know, the opposition saying, oh, rule out this and rule out that, it's really juvenile and, you know, really gotcha and really not adult. And this, we didn't play that game in COVID, you know, rule this out, rule that out. It's best that governments work together and plan for eventualities we hope don't come true, and, you know, expect to get through okay, but we have to be ready.
One of the lessons of COVID was that states sometimes go in different directions when things get really high pressure. Premiers might break away from the plan. Are you concerned about that? There's been a little bit of chatter from some of the premiers this week about some of these fuel settings and the four-point plan.
Look, all I can say is at this point, I mean, I sat in on the National Cabinet with the PM and gave an update from my point of view. The spirit around the table was good. I'm talking to state energy ministers across the board, you know, pretty regularly. We've convened meetings and we'll continue to do so. States, you know, are sovereign governments, but at this point, in fact, the states are the ones who are saying to us, you know, please coordinate, you know, and that's a good thing because a lot of people can actually travel from state to state, you know. The percentage of the population that can get from New South Wales to Queensland and vice versa, you know, is not immaterial. So So you don't want sort of, if you can avoid it, you don't want different rules in different states. But we're a long way from that at the moment.
Okay. There are a couple of other measures. The excise changes are coming in. People will see a 26 cent a litre cut from the cost at the bowser. Do you think that's going to make a difference? Any concern about inflation, that adding to the inflation challenge?
I think, Tom, that's against, you know, very steep price rise as it is in petrol.
Right.
So, you know, we have taken the edge off, you know, to the maximum degree possible, but we're not. Petrol will still be more expensive than people would like. And on inflation, I make the point too, by cutting the road user charge, which is the heavy vehicle equivalent of the petrol tax, to zero, we're really reducing the cost of getting food and goods around Australia, which is a good thing for inflation because that would flow through.
Yeah.
You know, if the Coles and Woolies and everyone else has to pay over the odds for transport, of course they are going to recoup it at the checkout. That's just the laws of economics. Yep. So if we can take some of the edge off that, that will help inflation.
Any concerns about how businesses are going to pass on these costs? I mean, we asked the Treasurer about this yesterday. There are ACCC powers, but is there an opportunity for the government to kind of say to business, Team Australia moment, do the right thing?
We have and we will and we will keep doing that, yes. ACCC is independent. I'll leave them to do their job and I'll give updates about their work. We have increased the fines and penalties. Of course, everyone hopes that ACCC doesn't need to impose any. But I'm sure, knowing the ACCC pretty well, if they have enough evidence and I'm sure it's a small minority, but if someone's been or does or is thinking about manipulating this difficult circumstance for financial gain illegally, the ACCC will be at them like a ton of bricks.
Mm. You mentioned the opposition and some of the criticism. You've been targeted this week in question time.
Used to that, Tom. That's okay.
Yeah. Tell me about that. I mean, does it catch up with you? Are you the right person to be communicating for the government in this?
Well, I mean, it is a difficult communications task to explain to people why some can't get petrol or diesel at a service station, but the national stocks are good. So that is a difficult communications task, but my approach to this is to tell the truth. You know, what's the alternative? You know, just to not tell the truth that the national supply's good and hasn't been disrupted. So, you know, in a circumstance like this, in my experience, you get plenty of commentators saying, oh, well, he should be saying this or should be saying that, or the tone's wrong or right. Okay, fine. You know, they might be right, I might be wrong. My job is to, one, get the policy settings right. That's the one, two, and three top. And then also to communicate what's happening. And again, the opposition has chosen to play gotcha politics and, you know, try and nitpick and all that sort of stuff. And, okay, they can do that. They haven't found a gotcha moment, in my view. Right? You know, there are no gotcha moments here because all the questions that they've put to us, we've answered. I think, personally, we to be very frank with you, Tom, in COVID, when I was Shadow Health Minister, we took the view we should be adults in the room. One, because that's the right thing for the country. Two, because we thought the Australian people would notice that. Remember at the time of the next election, who were adults here? If we weren't adults, they would remember and punish us. The opposition, in my view, has taken a different approach. They have not been constructive. They have not been adult. They have not been mature. And I think, you know, I think ultimately that is to their disadvantage. It's also, it's clearly not to the country's advantage. You know, we've been out there trying to spread the message. No need to panic buy. The international supply is good. They have been trying, as their talking points show, their leaked talking points show, the opposite message with no facts to their, you know, to their disposal, because every ship has arrived and the refineries are working full pelt. I mean, Angus Taylor's out there saying, oh, Chris Bowen's letting the refineries export. It's not true. And ultimately in politics, we could all have our views and we could all have our different communication style, but I always think it's better to be telling the truth. They've taken a different approach.
What was your view on the PM's address to the nation last night? I think some people during the day yesterday felt like they needed to be a bit more anxious that that was coming. But then the message was, go about things as normal.
And I think that's the role of a prime minister and the nation's leader, to say, yeah, not gild the lily. Times are tough. Might get tougher. But we've got this as a country. We've got your back as a government, and the country's got this. Like, I think that's a really important message, as I said, especially in the face of some of the disinformation out there. So I thought he did a great job. I understand. I mean, I was getting calls from people saying, oh, what's the PM announcing tonight?
You know,
I know there was a lot of angst. I think we announced at 11 a.m. that he was going to do the national address. And, yeah, my phone lit up to say, well, what's this all about? Is there a big announcement coming? You know, are we sending troops to the Middle East? You know, all of which was never going to happen. It was much more a... This is, I understand people are worried. I understand this is concerning, but we'll get through this together message. And I think that's what a Prime Minister can and should do in this environment. And I thought he did it very well.
You mentioned the shocks that you've had to deal with as Energy Minister. The current shock is because of the war the United States and Israel launched a bit more than a month ago. It's difficult for Australia. Our key ally is one of the main players, but we're really feeling the brunt, and I think the government's acknowledging that consumers are paying the price. What's your view of how things are going? Do you agree with the PM that it's time for the US to explain the timeline going forward?
Well, I agree with the PM. I mean, we've made comments about that. The PM will make more today at the National Press Club, as you and I record this. Maybe by the time this goes out, those comments will be, you know, public.
Yeah.
Look, we have never claimed to be central players in this.
Sure.
You know, I'm a member of the National Security Committee, the Cabinet, and obviously we don't talk about what goes on in that room, but we are not central players. We are not decision makers. Never claimed to be. We can express a view. But ultimately, United States, Israel and Iran are the three central players. And, you know, it is in everyone's best interest that this is resolved as quickly as possible. And even if it's resolved today, by the way, you know, there's still an air pocket of supply chain disruptions that are built in, you know.
Could be a pretty big air pocket, right?
Yeah, and that's the case mainly in oil, some in gas too, but mainly in oil. We'll deal with that. We'll deal with that. But the sooner it's resolved, the better. The more manageable that is.
Penny Wong is going to represent Australia in this conversation about the Strait of Hormuz. Are you able to say what the government's view would be about getting it reopened? That's one of the key choke points.
Well, look, I'm not here to speak for Penny. She'll be on that call. But, you know, clearly the best way of getting this resolved is as we've said, you know, the United States and other key players opening the straits in some form. But I'll leave Penny to comment on that in any further detail.
Trump is saying that countries should go and get their own oil. That's surely not feasible.
You know, we don't run a there's no nationalised oil delivery service here in Australia, but we are working closely, and the best example of that is our intervention, our legislation that I talked about to help companies go and get crude oil and diesel and petrol from a range of sources, Asian refineries, United States refineries, Mexican refineries, you know, a whole range. We're out there trying to get as much fuel as we can for Australia.
Tom McElroy and Chris Bowen will be right back.